Yes, Mr. Yes. Booth's father. But when my sister was in Morwell and they lived there, I said I was going to bring one of the children home while she had another baby. And I said to my brother-in-law, give me the broom and I'll sweep the drain down. It's disgusting, because the horses were making such a mess and it was winter. And I swept the drain down, and coming down in the train, I could feel my throat pricking. And I developed, what do you call it?
Diphtheria.
Mm-hmm.
Diphtheria.
Diphtheria. But the house at Berwick, there was a big side door and a passage, and my mother's room and her bathroom were on that side. And the governess had a bedroom there, and we had one here, the bathroom. We had our bathroom, and there was a passage between, and then it went along that way. And the boys slept down this end, and another sister slept over there, but two of us were in this room with the governess, and we were able to close that part off. And she looked after me and fed me and kept my dishes there, because we each had fireplaces in our bedroom, and nobody else got it. They were lucky that I had that terrible throat, it was. But the little child that I was carrying on my knees, she was all right, she didn't get it. But my youngest sister got a diphtheritic throat, that was all. Wasn't that a bit of luck?
Yeah.
Because it was a horrible thing to have. But you're immune afterwards. And I've never had an injection. When we were going overseas, we had injections for everything. I've never had a rejection of anything. So I don't think I'd get any of those diseases. And yet after we'd been on the continent and we came back to England and we had to call the doctor in, and he said, you're foolish people, taking trips like that when you're in your 60s, you shouldn't do it. Our blood pressure was up sky high. And he said, you'll just have to rest and get it down. Why do people do these hard trips when they're in their 60s? I said, because it takes them that long to save enough money yes. to have a trip. But they do it differently today. They go while they're young, and it doesn't cost so much, and they can camp out and do all those things that you can't do when you're in your 60s. But it was a good trip just the same.
So the Greaves you knew lived at Springfield, did they? They lived down here at Springfield?
Jeff Spencer.
No, the Greaves. The Greaves you knew, the ones whose family you married into,
yes.
were they the ones down here at Springfield? Who owned the Springfield property?
Not Springfield.
No.
They did own
the Springs.
That.
Was it the Springs?
They did own that. Just the Springs where they
right.
live now.
Right.
And his wife, he hadn't been married long to her when she died suddenly. And he's still living there and trying to
That's
bring
Jeff
the
Spencer.
Place up to what it was.
Right.
He's Spencer. Not a Greaves.
No. No. What was your husband's name?
He was Charles Greaves. There were three sons.
Right.
Well, there was one before those three, there was one. And he lived at Cranbourne. And he married, what was their name? There were crowds of them. They were all very pretty women. Some were dark and tall and some were fair. And one was a housekeeper there for years. And she married a Henry and went to live in New South Wales. But my father-in-law was quite old when he died. I was over 80, wasn't he? He was still riding his horse. When he was 83, he used to get on from a stump at home and ride into the Berwick station and go to town to do his business and come back, get on the horse and ride again. He always wore Donegal tweeds. And that's how he managed to look tidy, because he'd ride that horse in. It was 3 miles, I think, about.
Oh, yes.
Roughly 3 miles. And he did that. He was quite old, you know. There was a paddock near the railway station at Berwick, with trees. He used to put the saddle up there and the horse in the paddock. Then he'd ride back again at night home. He was a tough old boy, wasn't he?
Yes.
He had his own teeth. And he was trucking some cattle once. And what was he doing? Oh, they were going to come out, he had to get them back. And he took the rope that he had on the horse, put it in his mouth, and it pulled back. And he said it loosened all his teeth, and he went like that and pressed them back. He had his own teeth, he was quite old. And he said he felt them move, and he pressed them back. And they were still good when he was 80-something, wasn't it?
Yes, I think he was.
He was a marvellous old man.
He was in his early 90s when he died, didn't he? Well, he was in his early 90s, I think, wasn't he?
Yes, I think when he was 90-something when he died. And he was putting his shoes on the doorstep. And he just called out Clyde to his youngest son. And Clyde came and he just fell back and died. It's a nice way to go, you know, quietly. My husband did the same thing, but I didn't think it was so good because I found him. He said to go down and feed the stock instead of a boy coming from Clyde to do it who was renting the land. And he put the bales of hay out. That was all right. Put the string on the gate. And he must have been looking at the view at Beaconsfield, which was very pretty. And he just fell back. And I was in bed. The doctor had been and he said, don't get up, it's a nasty day. It's raining. So he was so long coming back. I got out of bed and put some slacks on, went down. And there he was, gone. Just lying there. And that created a stir. And of course, that's the way he wanted to go. That was all right. Yes, but I'll never forget the doctor.
It's all right for the patient. It's not so good for the ones that are left, is it?
He never wanted to be left, he said. And that morning, he hadn't been well for a long time. And his hands used to get cold when he was shaving. And that morning, he said, this is the first time I've shaved. It hasn't worried me. His hands weren't cold, and he felt better. He said, I feel better than I felt for a long time. I said, oh, that's good. And then he said to John, don't come over tomorrow. He said, I'll do it on Sunday. Save it coming from Clyde. I'll feed the cattle. He said, well, don't lift the bales of hay. Just push them through the gate. So he did that, and then just keeled over and was there. Oh.
What year were you married, Mrs. Grimes? What year were you married?
1923, wasn't it?
Yeah. And did you go straight to Brendon after you were married?
I'm just trying to work.
No, they didn't go straight to Brendon.
Mr. Grimes had a paddock as officer. It was 440 acres with a post and rail fence around it. And it had never had anything done to it. It was in its natural state. And there was quite an area of it covered with tea tree. And that all had to be removed. Which meant that the first 3 years there was no income. And we had a team of bullocks and a big log roller. And they rolled the scrub. There was a whole lot of tea tree on it. Of course, there was tea tree in the township of Berwick when we first came. It wasn't all cleared, but you couldn't find a piece now anywhere. They make tea tree fences, but they have to go a long way to get it. But we had a lot of tea tree in the cattle. We had to milk cows. I didn't milk, of course, but we had the cows, and they'd go in the tea tree. It was so dense. You couldn't see them when you were on horseback. We had to put bells on them to find out where they were on the land because there was a lot of it covered with tea tree. And we had a big roller and a team of bullocks and a bullock driver. And they rolled the tea tree, because the bullocks were the only things that could walk on it after it was crushed down. And it lay like that for a year. It was pretty tiring looking at it. And we had to put fences round to keep any animals in, and strong gates. And we had a box on the gate where the baker left the bread, and it opened at both sides so that you didn't have to go through the gate to get it, to get the bread. And for quite a long time, they would let the horse go, or the bullocks, while we were having lunch, and they could just come up and down the drive. They couldn't get into the garden part. And we wondered why the bread was disappearing. The baker would leave it in the box, and we'd find the centre of it was eaten out or something. We thought it was mice. And they couldn't do it in the time. But the horse was let loose in there during the lunch hour, and it would lift the box up and eat the centre out of the loaf. We caught it one day. We knew then where the bread was going. But the baker used to leave it, you see. Then we got wise to going down quickly to get it, because it was about from here to the hospital, to the road, quite close to the road. And there was a terrible lot of fencing to do before you could make a garden or anything. We had quite a nice garden there. But they moved a house up from the Springs, the place where the Jeff Spencer is living now. There was a brick house, and then there was a passageway they called the vestibule, and they used to have meals in that. And then there were 2-3 bedrooms off it where the boys slept until they were all married and gone, you see. So this was joined onto the brick house. It was a tin house, really, iron. So they took that away and put it up to office, and we lived in that. That wasn't very tony, but still it was all right for us. The other Greaves women wouldn't have lived in it. No. But we lived in it. And everybody used to say, yes, they're the ones that live in the tin house. Well, it wasn't burnable anyway. You knew it wouldn't be burnt in a bushfire. And we had a few of those. But one day I went to town. I used to be rather keen on going to town. And I'd walk all over town and go to shows, you know, painters, artists shows and things like that that would be on. I wouldn't rest all day. I would walk all over the city, because this was a different city in those days. And it was lovely. The shops were beautiful. I never bought anything, but I would just walk around and go to these shows that were on, artists, 20 different artists were trying to make their way. And they would have shows, and they'd be right along down towards the river. And that would amuse me a good deal of the day, and I would window shop, but never buy anything. And my husband was always saying, do you want any money? I'd say, no thanks. I never had any money to spend, but I would go around. I'd have enough to go to an art show if I wanted to. And that interested me. It was a change from the from the dairy, the everlasting milking. But they would get up about 4 o'clock and milk the cows. And the milk used to go to a man called Hopgood in Collingwood. And we barracked for Collingwood for years because they brought up on our milk. He had a milk bar in, I'm forgetting the name of the streets. What's the name of the well-known street there, up by the hospital?
So were you...
Victoria Parade.
Oh, yes.
Were you related at all to the Davy brothers who used to collect the milk from this area in the carts? There was a Davy brothers business, and they used to collect the milk from this whole area and take it into the city.
Harris?
No, Davy Brothers, I'm sure.
That was D-A-V-E-Y, I think, wasn't it?
Was that different spelling?
I think this man was called Hopgood with the dairy, but of course it would be quite a big place now. I suppose he wouldn't be there any longer. But we used to sell the milk there. There were 12 milk carts at the Officer railway station. Every morning at 7:30, the train would collect the milk from all these, and the road used to flood, the horses used to play up, because we'd break in young horses. The Greaves was very keen on horses. And we had a load of china, a big case of china. We're bringing it from Berwick, I think. And this chestnut horse was very bad tempered, big strong horse, and was a long shaft jinker, and he started to buck. And we had this great big case of china. Oh, I was scared, I thought we were going to lose the whole thing that we were bringing. Good china, some of it too. I was rather keen on collecting cups and saucers and Dalton plates, because the man used to sell them at the market in Dandenong. And they have the best one that I had. It was Bobby Burns in the, and all the characters around the edge. And it's one of the best glazed plates. The glaze is nearly so good now, because that's 60 years later.
Oh, it's still very lovely.
It's a beautiful plate. It was the best plate I ever had. I had a lot of Dalton plates. And in the house we were in, it was the best built house in Berwick, and still is. And the lady that owns it now, she took some of the boards off when she bought it and looked at them, because it was weatherboard, to see that they were, whether they were rotten or not. But they were sound after all those years. And we'd been there for 48 years.
This is Brendan.
That was in Berwick
this
after we left
Brendan
officer.
We're talking about
yes, she's
now,
talking
isn't
about
it?
Brendan.
This is Brendan.
Brendan.
The Brendan property.
Brendan, they
yes.
call it. Well,
what did you call it?
The people, it was called Omepi in the first instance. Some people at Cockatoo built it. At least they owned it early in the piece.
Mm-hmm.
And their name was... gone.
Oh, I don't remember the name.
Isn't it terrible?
Doesn't it?
Anyway, it was called Aubépine. It's French for hawthorn. Their name was Hawthorne, and they lived at Cockatoo.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't meet them, at least I didn't meet them, till the war years. And our husbands were playing soldiers. It was called the Volunteer Defence Corps, because we thought Australia was going to be attacked at that time. I don't know what they would have done, but they played soldiers, and they used to have practice once a week. And my husband was a captain, and they used to come from the other centres, and they'd have a meeting place, and they'd do their stuff. And they'd go to the different centres. We went to Cockatoo once, and we met those people, and their name was... told you. Well, we met them. They were very charming, and they had once owned the place where we lived, which was now called Brendan, which of course was English, because a Dr. Drake in England had TB, and they thought if he could come to Australia, he'd last for 6 months. So they came to Australia, and they bought Aubépine, and they called it Brendan. As people will do, they will change the names of every place. Spoil it. Well, they called it Brendan, after one of their places in England. They were very charming, and they pulled down the old house and built a new one. And every board in this is just as good as the day it was built, because it was during the Depression, and all the timber came from Powelltown, and all the workmen were glad to work, and they made beautiful sideboards, and all the doors are grained, and there's good timber in that house. And when that lady bought it just quite lately, she took some of the boards off to see what condition they were in, because they'd been treated with copper sulfonate.
Mm-hmm.
And it gave it a grey appearance, and now she's had it painted white. And of course it shows up, it looks nice. I think I've only seen it from the road, I haven't been to it. She's asked me to go. It's a big effort now to go anyway. Mm. And, well, Mrs. Drake pulled it all down and used the timber of it to make dog kennels down in the paddocks, because all the English are mad keen on their dogs. Dogliness is next to godliness in England, according to Mr. Menzies, who found that out when he went there, because we did too. They used to bath their dogs in the bath next door in the hotel where we were staying.
Yeah.
I said to Charles one day, there's a woman bathing her dog in the bath. He said, how do you know they haven't done it in ours? Yeah. Before we had a bathroom with our bedroom. A lot of the bedrooms are like that in some of the hotels.
Yeah.
And another one had a dog and used to come up to the bar every night and have its sip of drink. Put his paws on the counter, and everybody knew it and respected it. Very well behaved dog. But they all used to put their dogs in the bath.
So what year did you move to Brendon? What year would that be?
Brendon. We were there for 48 years.
So it'd be 1920 something? 1930?
I think we were only an officer for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
We had to work it in conjunction with a part of the land of the mm-hmm. Springs,
mm-hmm.
where Jeff Spencer is now.
Mm-hmm.
That had been divided amongst the sons, the three sons. And Sid had a portion out that side towards Nary Warren. Can you remember the name of it?
I think it would be about the 40s that you moved to Brendon, wouldn't it?
Well, we married in 23.
15 years is 1938.
Yes, I think it would be getting near.
We were 15 years at officer, I think. And then we lived in different places. We had a house. There was a settlement in Berwick. That's another story.
Mm-hmm.
The British government did it and settled people, all different nationalities, in it. I don't know what... I wouldn't be sure.
But you built another house before... after the first house at officer, didn't you?
Before you went to Brendon. My husband was losing his sight. He'd been cutting a log one day when we were on the first place. And he came in and said, I've got a splinter in my eye. Could you take it out with a handkerchief or something? I said, no, I couldn't. I'll take it to Dr. Langmore. I wouldn't touch it. So Dr. Langmore took four splinters out of the eyeball, and he didn't notice anything for about 2 years. We were still at office, and he was sighting some posts for a fence. And he had very good sight, although other things weren't so good after the war, but his sight was still good. It was wonderful. And he found he couldn't see so well with one eye. So he went to the doctor, and he said, you better go to an eye specialist. So we went to an eye specialist, the best one there was. And he said, yes, it was affected. It had germs. Mm-hmm. So he'd been cutting a rotten log,
mm-hmm.
and it flew up. And I suppose it was an infection, and nobody knew,
yeah.
till about 2.5 years afterwards. And by that time, it had affected the eyesight. So he eventually lost that eye, and he had a glass eye made by a man in, was that outer suburb? Anyway, he was interned during the war. He was a German. He was an excellent eye maker, and he made a glass eye, and you couldn't tell, it was so good. But during the war he was interned, and you couldn't get, he used to get a special glass from Germany. You couldn't get that glass. He was interned for the term of the war, and you couldn't get glass eyes, at least not made like he made them. Have you seen them made? And they have a long stick of glass and a heater, and they melted and shaped the eye. Very clever, mm-hmm. and he was very good at it, but he was interned mm-hmm. because he was suspect, and he wasn't the only one here. Mm-hmm. And they had to get ready-made glass eyes to take the place of the ones he made. He was splendid at it. And they were a menace because the glass wasn't the same. Mm-hmm. He'd been getting it from a special factory mm-hmm. in Germany, a certain place, because that place was at war, so we couldn't get that. And he had to get plastic eyes, and they gave quite a lot of trouble. Some people can't wear them so long. It's something to do with the saliva, I suppose. I don't know what it was. Mm. But they never looked good, did they?
No.
It was sort of starey, and his was so good. Mm. I saw him making one. He liked it to see what he was doing. But I wonder what he did all that time.
Coming back to Brendan, when you moved to Brendan, how large was the property? Was it also a grazing property?
No, there were
16
three
acres.
Or four properties along there, and they'd all been more or less subdivided.
Right.
And there were 16 and a half acres mm. on ours, and I think still is. But now there's talk about it. They all run down to the Cardinia Creek, and the one next door was Tuckfields. They were very good neighbours. He'd had three wives. They all died. Wasn't that peculiar? Wasn't it?
Yes.
During our time there.
Yes.
But the day my husband died, I called over the fence, but they couldn't hear. They were around the other side. And when I rang the doctor, they said, "Where do you live?" And I knew it wouldn't be our own doctor then. And when she came, I'll never forget her. She was terribly popular in Berwick. She's retired now. But she said to me, "Put yourself together." And I was so shocked, I couldn't say anything. I wasn't saying anything. And she said, "Well, I want a stretcher and half a dozen men. Have you got a stretcher?" Oh, I said, "No. Where would we get a stretcher?" She said, "I want six big men." Oh. I said, "Well, you're welcome to the telephone." I was so disappointed it wasn't our own doctor. And I was asking where he was. And she said, "Why?" I said, "I'd like to see him. He was my husband's doctor." She said, "Well, he's off duty." Anyway, some friends got him afterwards. And he was very comforting. But I've never met anything so cold. And I was a bit upset about that, but I wasn't saying anything. She kept saying to me, "Put yourself together," but I was too shocked. Mm-hmm. And she'd had her favourite sister out from Ireland, and everything was all right. Then later I heard that that sister had died in Ireland, so she had a trip back to Ireland. Then I had to go to the hospital. So I saw her in the hospital, so I asked to speak to her, and I said I was sorry, but she was a different person, because she had never had a bereavement herself, and she had no idea. That was the only time I'd been disappointed in doctors. But Dr. Stevenson was, some people say, cold fish. I said, "No, he's not. He's very compassionate, and he still comes to see me, but he's trying to edge out, but he doesn't want it." A bit of a nuisance, isn't it? I don't think the others want me.
He's getting older, though, isn't he? He's old enough to retire.
Oh, he wants to retire. He doesn't want to do anything. It's an awful nuisance, but he still does come to see me. And they've just had a trip overseas to a conference in London, and they went to
Switzerland.
Iceland, wasn't it?
When you were at Brendan, what what did you use the 16 acres for? Were you still, did you have cattle still?
Oh, we had 16 and a half acres there. I think it's still the same size. People, the ancients are gnashing their teeth. They want to get it and chop it all up, put houses all over it. It's horrible.
But did you have cattle while you were there?
Yes, we had cattle grazing on it at the last, but we had let it to a boy at Clyde. Because he was able to, he was a cattle dealer really, and he made quite a lot of money, and he was a wonderful fellow. And do you know that just at the end, he had a throat, something wrong with his throat. He'd made a wonderful place of where he was living at Clyde. He bought it, and it was a show place. And he used to have young people coming just to see what a dairy farm was like and what milking was and everything. Some were interested, some weren't. He used to have these open days, and we'd go. And I went once and took some, my sister and her grandchildren. Of course, they were city slickers, and they weren't a bit interested, and they thought it was disgusting, a man milking a cow.